Welcome back to the Kennedy Dynasty Podcast. I am your host, Allison, and I hope you are having a great week. This week is going to be a little different, and it's going to be in two parts. It is a conversation with historian, teacher, and my friend Ryan Pryor, who you guys have heard from before, about the Bay of Pigs invasion. So I hope you enjoy part one, starting now. And here I am, joined with Ryan Pryor.
Joined with Ryan Pryor?
Yeah.
Joined by Ryan Pryor.
And here I am, joined by Ryan Pryor. That's why you're here to teach me today.
How many whiskey sours have you had?
I've had a sip of one, so that's just me.
Okay, that's
so
good.
So he is here to talk with us all about the Bay of Pigs. He is the Bay our of favorite. Pigs. Yes, our favorite history teacher.
I've got my glass here. This is the Mourning Dove glass.
Oh, that's a nifty one. I've got a 2020 pass holder, 25th anniversary food and wine festival from Walt Disney World.
Oh, okay. Very good. Yep. Oh.
Yep, he's on there flipping some food. So
look at Mickey that. I'm a big fan of novelty glasses.
Yeah.
I think they add a flair.
They do.
To your beverage consumption.
They do. They make it taste better.
Okay.
I love it.
So, yes, it does. It does make it taste better. Today I'm drinking a little George Dickel single barrel with San Pellegrino.
Today, I'm drinking some Jack Daniel's whiskey with some kind of low-carb, sugar-free sour mix from the grocery store.
So we do like our sour mash whiskeys.
We do what we do.
And bourbon, that's from another state. They can GTFO, I like to say.
That's right. That's right. Speaking of GTFO.
The Bay of Pigs. You know what's funny? And I'm going to fully admit this. Up until like a year ago, the most thing I knew about the Bay of Pigs invasion was from the Billy Joel song, We Didn't Start the Fire,
where he just says... I don't think I've heard that one, unfortunately.
You've never heard We Didn't...
I'm going to insert a clip right here. Hemingway, Eichmann, Stranger in the Strange Land, Dylan, Berlin, Bay of Pigs invasion. Okay, now you've heard it.
It's Bay of Pigs invasion. Fun fact about that song, and I know this is not a Billy Joel podcast, but shouldn't it be?
Now it is.
That song is a series. The fact that you've never heard We Didn't Start the Fire is really interesting to me. I'd like to find the hole that you were living in for 20 years. But the We Didn't Start the Fire is a series of things that happened between the 1950s and the 1970s. And fun fact about that song, he sat down and wrote out the song, and it was like the whole point was to do it in chronological order, and he did it right the first time. Oh. Like, he wrote out all the events as he was writing the song, and he didn't have to go back and fix it, because he actually got all the, it's like several events that happened, and it's talking about We Didn't Start the Fire, and he wrote it all out, did not have to do a rewrite.
Oh, man. People like that just make me mad. Like, it's William Joel. Where's my talent? Where is my brain?
We're doing it right now.
Well, I know, but I'd have to like, I have to study. I have to relook up. I have to think of dates.
That's okay.
I know. To each their own. Okay. It's fine. But that's why you're here. You are here to take us through and teach us.
My 6 years of education in this area, here I am to talk about the Bay of Pigs. So other than the Billy Joel song, if you're new to the Bay of Pigs, welcome to the club. Mm-hmm. It is often, as a foreign policy event, overshadowed, of course, by what other event? The Cuban Missile Crisis. People often forget about the Bay of Pigs or don't know much about it because of the interactions between John F. Kennedy and Cuba, Fidel Castro. It's plays second fiddle. Of course, a plug for some of your earlier podcasts from a couple of months ago. We did a wonderful two-part episode, or you did a wonderful two-part episode that I was a part of.
It was you. You can take credit.
And so technically this is like a prequel, because this takes place in 1961, and the Cuban Missile Crisis takes place in 1962. So, If you're trying to, put it, dear listeners, if you're trying to put this chronologically in your brain, we're going back in time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think you say too, if you haven't heard those episodes, you say at some point in there, like, oh, and this is when the Bay of Pigs happened. So maybe go back, listen to that. And then when he says that, bring in this episode and then go back around. So
I'm going to leave that up to them. However they want to do it.
It's a good path.
it's kind of like that argument. Do you watch the Star Wars? Do you watch them in chronological order, or do you watch them in order of by order of like?
Yeah, I'm going to lose listeners for this. I've never seen all of Star Wars, and my husband is very irritated about it. I know it's bad. It's bad. But
you're killing
me,
Smalls.
Would say that you start. Wait, no. What would he say? It's like 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3,
yes.
Something like that.
Yes.
Yeah, I've heard him argue it so many times that I kind of remember.
I would argue that you watch them as from when they were released, like in the actual history. And that's just because it's important to see the progression. And you can just skip the ones that came out in the last 5 years because those are terrible.
Those are the ones everyone loves.
No, they do. No, they not. No, no.
Are you talking about the 90s ones?
No, the 90s ones are. No, those are the prequels and those are awesome.
Like Natalie Portman?
Yes. Okay. Those are fantastic. In fact, I'm a giant... This is not a podcast about the prequels or Billy Joel. This is a podcast about John F. Kennedy.
I'm sure there's some fans out there of all these topics, though. It's fine.
Next time, we're going to do a whole... I just want Q&As on what are your thoughts on the Star Wars cinematic universe.
Honestly, I'm going to get Jeffrey on here for that one. Y'all can talk. I'll take a break.
Okay. All right, here we go. Let's talk about it. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
So... John F. Kennedy is inaugurated January of 1961. Bay of Pigs happens in April 1961. Actually, it's the 50-year anniversary this month of... Mm. No, 60-year. 60-year anniversary this month of the Bay of Pigs invasion.
Wow.
Yeah. But as always, I'm a history teacher, and I tell my kids this. Why do we learn history? There's obviously the quote that I like to bring up from Faulkner, but the other reason we learn history, the biggest reason we learn history, is to give context to our lives, okay? So whenever we're talking about anything, I always have to give, we have to give context to it, because you can't understand a historical event if you don't understand what happened before it or what happened after it.
That's true.
So my favorite word is coming up. We're going to do a prelude. I really loved that when you did that the last time. That's why I wanted to make sure it gets... I think that should be a thing for me. I'm really happy about it.
I'm literally playing.
I love it. Prelude. Yeah. and so we got to go back to the end of the Second World War in the 1950s. So, right. End of the Second World War, the peace treaties are signed between the Japanese, the former Third Reich. And all of a sudden, America's enemies are no longer the Nazis and the Japanese, but rather the Soviets. Right. Mm-hmm. So, and that, of course, is 1947 is the sort of the official beginning of the Cold War. And the sort of original concept of how to fight the Soviet Union in this new kind of war, this Cold War, this war that if you actually fight the war, it's going to lead to thermonuclear disaster because of the atomic bomb. So the United States is kind of following under this idea of a domino theory, okay? A domino theory. The idea is that while we can't stop the Soviet Union from being communist, if other nations become communist, it will lead to a domino theory where one falls and hits the other and so on and so forth, like a domino, like a group of dominoes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And this is how the United States basically operates in terms of its foreign policy throughout the 1950s, throughout the 1960s, and into the 1970s, okay? In particular, what the United States and the Soviet Union try to do is to operate or create spheres of influence, okay? There's that terminology called spheres of influence, okay? Basically, they're trying to create regions where communism exists, if you're the Soviet Union, or regions where capitalism, democracy, these are things. So again, to prevent the domino theory from happening, they're operating under this idea of spheres of influence, okay?
Okay.
And the reason that we have to talk about that is because the biggest sphere of influence for the United States was, of course, the Western Hemisphere, North and South America. Operating under these auspices, the Eisenhower administration had gotten very, very close to a guy by the name, and I love this name, a guy by the name of Fulgencio Batista.
Mm.
Fulgencio. We need more Fulgencios. Now, Fulgencio Batista as a man, kind of a piece of shit. Mm-hmm. He was a dictator. But he was very, very friendly to the United States. So he had overthrown the Cuban government during the 1950s, but very, very friendly to the United States. He allowed American casinos to operate. In fact, there's this very famous scene from The Godfather Part Two. Please tell me you've seen The Godfather Part Two.
Sure. I'm sorry.
I'm gonna hold in my rage. The Godfather Part Two, where it's too complicated to explain, but basically the main characters of The Godfather are Michael Corleone is trying to sort of own and operate a casino. And actually what ends up happening, interestingly enough, is they're there during the fall of Fulgencio Batista, but we'll get there in a second. Fulgencio Batista, again, terrible dictator, very oppressive, but friendly to the United States. At the time of his reign, the United States had access to like 80% of Cuban sugar and cattle production. So not only was it, he was an economic friend of the United States, he was a political friend. He was very rabidly anti-capitalist, anti-communist, I'm sorry. And as you might be aware, he did not last very long as the dictator of Cuba, because along comes a young, cigar-smoking, bearded, charismatic communist by the name of Fidel Castro. All right? And that's...
Pause.
That's...
Doesn't he look just like Liam Neeson to you?
No.
No, I'm serious. He's a twin to Liam Neeson. I cannot be the only one. DM me if you agree with me. Twins. Isn't that the guy from Taken?
Yes.
Oh, twins.
Also...
Yeah. I can't be the only one to think
also
that.
Star Wars Episode One: The Phantom Menace.
Oh, also there. But no, DM me if you agree.
Okay. He was Qui-Gon Jinn. He's been a lot of things. Liam Neeson. Liam Neeson's great. Is this a podcast about Liam Neeson?
No, Billy Joel, I'm just saying they look alike.
No, I'm actually, now I'm just saying, I think this is where you need to go next. I think you pick up a whole new audience. But anyway, and Fidel Castro comes to power on January 1st, 1959. Okay, he leads a violent revolution. It takes a long time, and this is also, by the way, in The Godfather Part Two. You can see all of this as a part of the cinematic universe of The Godfather. And I actually like this, and I don't know whether you should make this the... I don't know if you should make this the title of one of your podcasts, but I think it's cool. Fidel Castro's like tagline, catchphrase during this time was "Cuba si, Yankee no." So Cuba si, comma Yankee no, and he bet Yankee. So Yankui, and basically he came to power saying like, not only is Batista an incredible dictator, bad for the people of Cuba, but also the Americans are taking advantage of us. We are not gaining things from being allied or being connected to the United States, to the Yankees. And so he takes power. That's a whole thing. In fact, there's a great museum in Havana called the Museum of the Revolution.
You told us about that.
Yes, and where you can learn all about this. Thankfully, hopefully our new presidential administration will be more friendly to Cuban-American relations. And we'll be able to go back there much more easily. So why is this a problem? Why is it a problem that now there's a young charismatic communist in Cuba? Spheres of influence, right? Well, guess what? Cuba's 90 miles from Key West.
Mm-hmm.
All right? That's too close to our sphere. Our sphere has been violated. And the United States can't have that.
Mm-hmm.
So starting on January 1st, 1959, and by the way, Eisenhower is still president, of course, at this time.
Right.
They immediately begin plans to try to figure out how to depose Castro. And the CIA comes to Eisenhower and says, we have an idea. We have ideas. And Eisenhower approves something like $13 million, which at the time is an exorbitant amount of money, to say, okay, how do we figure out how to overthrow Castro? So it's going on for 2 years before JFK even shows up on the scene. Meanwhile, guess what's happening? Castro is buddying up to the Soviets. Castro is starting to sell the sugar and cattle instead of selling it to the United States. He's selling to the Soviets. Mm-hmm. All right. He's making friends with the Kremlin. And that is very, very worrisome to a Cold War anti-communist United States who is terrified that their sphere has become a part of the domino. Add on top of it that Fidel Castro is also talking to all these other Central American nations, South American nations, and saying like, hey, we got a good thing going here. Why don't you join us? Why don't we all get together and be communists together? That's an oversimplification of the thing. But that's a scary thing if you're the United States. And so that's sort of where we're at. And of course, in 1960, you have the election of 1960, which we've also done a wonderful episode on, I think, back in November. Seems like a million years ago.
It does.
But that's a great episode. If you're new to the podcast and haven't listened to it, that was a good two-parter.
That one. That was fun.
You can hear the palpable anxiety in our voices, or at least in mine.
Yeah, mine too.
It's a good thing we didn't film those, because I was looking rough.
Plot twist, we did film them. I have them on my desktop right now.
So, and this actually is a part of, technically you can connect this, like I said, all a part of the context, because one of the things that Nixon uses against Kennedy during the election of 1960 is that he won't have the ability to deal with the Soviet Union. He is not strong enough, basically. He will be weak when it comes to fighting communism around the world. That was one of sort of a big thing that they used against JFK during that election. And so JFK comes into office having something to prove. And that's kind of where this story doesn't start, but where this story is at the moment of January 20th, 1961, which is the day that Kennedy takes office. And he is, again, presidents don't get a day off. They get one day to celebrate, and then the next day, they're on the job. And so this all this stuff lands on Kennedy's desk the day after. Remember I said earlier in the episode, January 20th, April is when the Bay of Pigs happened, okay? January to April, so January, February, March, 3 months.
Like, literally think about January being, feels like yesterday, and now we're in April. Same difference.
Yeah. So same difference. Exact same difference, okay? And so, honestly, that would be hard for any president, right? Your country is gripped by fear because of the Cold War, and all of a sudden, there's a communist country 90 miles from you.
Right.
And remember that at this time, the American people and the American government is thoroughly convinced that, like, again, this theory of the domino effect. One country falls, all the countries fall. And again, it's a war in their minds for an ideological survival. Now, we know now, in hindsight, that that maybe not have been the whole truth. But at the time, it's the real. It's the real real. And so that's where we are. And so this is where we move past the prelude.
Prelude.
To the interlude.
Interlude.
That's all for today, guys. Make sure you're subscribed to catch part two that will be released next week. Make sure you check out all the links in the show notes. That's to my Instagram to follow, my recommendations, my merch shop, all the things. If you like the podcast, please rate it 5 stars and write a positive written review, and I will talk to you guys next week.
History is the greatest adventure story, but does it ever leave you wondering what the women were doing all that time? This is Lori from the Her Half of History podcast, and the answer is that some women were seizing power, or escaping slavery, or spying for their country, or creating artistic masterpieces, while countless others were doing the laundry, getting married, and wondering why their clothes don't have more pockets. If you would like to hear the stories of women doing all of those things, check out Her Half of History at herhalfofhistory.com or wherever you get your podcasts.